Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. Hello, fellow gamer. Welcome to episode 132 of Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. I'm Lex Starwalker, and on this show, we discuss the craft and the art of game mastering. Not only do I pass along any wisdom that I've gained over my 25 plus years of running RPGs, I also share wisdom from guest GMs and listener GMs like you. Today, I'm discussing PC backstories and how to bring them into the story of your campaign. Not only will using these character hooks enrich the story of your game, but it will also increase player buy-in and engagement. But before we get into all of that, I have a few other things that I'd like to discuss. First of all, for those of you playing Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, I wanted to let you know, in case you don't already know, that Wizards of the Coast has started releasing Unearthed Arcana on their website every week. They have a bunch of new player options that they want playtested. So every week they are doing an Unearthed Arcana with more class archetypes, and they're wanting people to try them out and give them feedback. So it seems like they're just going through the classes in order. So far over the past 4 weeks, we've had new class archetypes submitted for the Barbarian, Bard, Cleric, and Druid. Even more importantly, I think, Wizards is doing surveys on each of these. So every Monday, a new Unearthed Arcana comes out with new player options for the next class. And at the same time, a survey comes out about the Unearthed Arcana from the previous week. So at the time of recording this week, we got a Druid Unearthed Arcana with a few more archetypes for druids. And we also got a survey on last week's Unearthed Arcana, which was a few new cleric domains. So if you're playing or running 5th edition, I highly recommend that you go check these out. I will have a link to these in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. And you can just head on over to the Unearthed Arcana page every Monday and check out the new Unearthed Arcana, and then take the survey on last week's Unearthed Arcana. You know, this is your chance to help direct the game, the development of the game, and give Wizards feedback on these archetypes and the abilities, what you like, what you don't like, and why. And one thing that is really nice about Wizards surveys that they do is they do, you know, the usual multiple choice, you know, click a radio button kind of questions, but then they also have text fields where you can give feedback. So they will go down through every new ability in an Unearthed Arcana and say, how much do you like this or not? And you click the answer. But then you also have a text field where you can talk about what specifically you like or don't like. And I spend a lot of time writing stuff in those and trying to give good feedback as far as what I like and why, and what I don't like and why. Now, personally, I'm sad to say that I've been rather underwhelmed with many of these new options that have been coming out in these recent Unearthed Arcana. For instance, last week we got three new cleric domains, and those were, I believe, the Forge domain, the Grave domain, and the Protection domain. So to me, you know, looking over these domains as far as, you know, what kind of thematically or from a story perspective, what these domains are supposed to represent, and then also the actual mechanics and abilities that you gain from these domains. When I look through all that, I found them very unoriginal, and two of these just seem like very slightly different spins on already existing domains. So the protection domain has a lot in common with the life domain. And to me, it's almost just a reflavored life domain. And the grave domain is like a reflavored death domain. So I think that we do need more domains in the game. And, you know, I put this in my feedback when I took the survey this week on this. I do think that we need more domains, but these aren't the domains that we need. And, you know, what I would like to see Wizards do, and this is what I suggested in the survey, is look at the look at your pantheons of deities, okay? So you're shoving Forgotten Realms down our throats, whether we want it or not. So look at the various deities in Forgotten Realms. Look at their portfolios, right? And just take like the most popular human deities like Kelimvor and Helm and Illmater and all those guys. Look at their portfolios. And for each deity, say, if I had to boil down this portfolio to one domain, what would that domain be? And then make those domains, because the 9 domains we have in the game right now, I guarantee you, are not going to well cover even the most popular deities in Forgotten Realms. You know, and to me, it feels like what Wizards is doing here is they're looking at the domains more from a mechanical perspective, and they're saying, oh, what kind of cool new abilities could we give the clerics that they don't have before? Or what different combination of abilities can we use? Because a lot of these, and this is one of my criticisms of a lot of this Unearthed Arcana stuff, is a lot of these abilities aren't actually new abilities. They're abilities that some other domain or some other character class or something has. They're just, oh, let's take this ability from here and put it over there. Or it's an ability just slightly reskinned from somewhere else. So a lot of this isn't really new mechanics or new options, really. They're just different combinations of options that we've already had. So it seems to me like they're taking this more, starting with mechanics, you know, what do we want to do mechanically? And then let's come up with a domain for that, as opposed to what I think they should do, which is look at the deities and look at, you know, what are the domains that you really need to have? Like, compare and contrast different pantheons. So take the Dragonlance pantheons and the Forgotten Realms, and like they have like the Celtic pantheon and the Egyptian pantheon and the Greek pantheon. Take all those and look at these and say, what are common elements? Like, for instance, every pantheon probably has a god of war, right? So we should probably have a war domain. Every pantheon has a god of storms, so we should have a storm domain, which we do, Tempest, right? And I think that if you did that, you would find some domains that you need to have that are shared across all these different pantheons, but aren't in the game yet. And those are the domains that I wish Wizards would focus on creating, as opposed to, oh, let's just slightly reflavor the death domain and call it the grave domain. I mean, this is taking us down the road that we're at in Forgotten Realms, where, you know, we've got all these gods that are just slightly different versions of the same thing, and all these domains that are just slightly versions of the same thing. Like, do you really need a war domain and a battle domain? Are those really going to be different enough to make it worth it? I mean, maybe, you know, maybe one day the game will get to that point, but I don't think we're there yet. I think there's other domains that aren't just a slight variation of a domain that we already have that don't yet exist. And, you know, an easy example of that that always comes up that people are always asking for is elemental domains. How about a fire domain, earth domain, water domain, you know, air domain? You know, that's an easy one. But again, I think if you take any pantheon and you look at those gods and what their portfolios are and say, okay, what domain would best represent this? I think you'd find we have some things missing. For instance, here's one, Loth, okay? Loth is given the trickery domain. And I don't know about you, but I don't think trickery fits Loth, really. I don't see Loth as a god pulling tricks on people, right? I mean, she's not a mischievous, I'm going to trick you, I'm going to, you know, fool you kind of god. Like, I don't know. I mean, if I were to boil Loth down to like one domain, what would it be? I don't know, but it wouldn't be trickery. Maybe treachery. I could see treachery being a domain. And you might say, well, treachery is just kind of a variant on trickery. And maybe it is. But to me, that's at least, you know, we have a very popular deity here and we don't have a good domain that fits her. Trickery doesn't really fit her. But if we came up with a good treachery domain, that would fit her really well. And, you know, maybe some of you that are better steeped in Loth lore have better ideas of what the one domain to represent Loth would be. And I'd love to hear them. But I think you see what I'm saying here. I think I'm getting the point across, even if my example isn't the greatest. I'm pretty underwhelmed with these Unearthed Arcanas so far. Usually there's something at least somewhat decent in them. For instance, the Druid one that came out this week, I wasn't really blown away by any of the new Druid archetypes. In fact, they didn't even hold my interest enough to read them all, to be honest. I will probably just ignore them until or if I have a player that says, hey, can I play this Druid from the Unearthed Arcana? And then I'll go read the thing and decide if it seems okay or not. But one thing that was cool in the Druid Unearthed Arcana was an optional system for determining what kind of animals a Druid character can shapeshift into. Instead of just saying, oh, you can shapeshift into any beast of the appropriate CR that you've seen before, instead there's a system where you have to observe the animal or interact with it. And I thought that was pretty cool. And it also had a system where you get access to different animals at different levels, which I thought that was kind of cool too, because obviously all the animals of a given CR aren't created equally. So I thought that was a really cool idea, especially the idea of, you know, you can't just walk by an animal and see it and now you can turn into it. You have to actually study it for some time or interact with it peacefully or something like that in order to learn enough to be able to become that animal. I thought that was a really cool idea. But as far as the three new archetypes and the abilities they get, not so much. But that's just my opinion. And my point here is we all have opinions, and these surveys are your chance to have your opinion be heard. And then obviously, you know, the opinions that are shared by the most people are the ones that Wizards will probably pay the most attention to. But let your voice be heard. This is your chance. And, you know, this is an amazing thing about this game that we don't see in a lot of other RPG games, especially kind of the more mainstream RPG games, where Wizards is doing all this playtesting and soliciting all this feedback and actually listening and using the feedback to guide what they develop in the future and where they take future products and things like that. So I think it's a pretty safe assumption looking at these Unearthed Arcanas that we're going to get, you know, new class archetypes in the future. Whether that will be a book solely of class archetypes or not, I don't know. Personally, I doubt it. If you look at pretty much all of the fifth edition books so far, they're all doing various things at the same time. You know, even the adventure books also serve as giving you more setting material on the Sword Coast or giving you some more creatures or magic items or whatever. You know, the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide was, yeah, player options, but that was actually less than half of the book. A lot of the book was setting stuff and hooks for a DM to use. And Volo's Guide to Monsters, you know, isn't just another monster manual with a bunch of monsters in it. It also has information on the various monsters and expands on some of those monsters quite a bit. So it seems to me like Wizards is trying with every fifth edition product they put out, they're trying to put out something that's going to appeal at least a little bit to everyone. Whether you're a player, whether you're a dungeon master, there's going to be something for you in this. So I don't see them putting out a book that's nothing but player options, but I think that it's safe to say that we are going to get more player options. You know, maybe we'll get them, hopefully not in adventures, because I would really be unhappy if, you know, people have to go buy these adventures, these campaigns, in order to get new player options. But I could see them doing something like another Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, where they have a bunch of player options and then they've got some more setting stuff, maybe on more on the Sword Coast, or maybe some information on a different part of the realms that we haven't explored yet in fifth edition or something like that. But we'll see. But, you know, it's really cool that they're soliciting this feedback and that they're using it. So I really encourage you, if you care about this game at all, to participate in the surveys. And it's kind of like voting, right? If you don't participate, then you really don't have any right to bitch about what happens, right? This is your chance to make your voice heard. If you can't be bothered to do that, then I don't really think you have much cause to complain about whatever Wizards does with the game in the future, because, you know, you missed your chance. So yeah, you know, and if you agree with me, especially if you agree with me, take the survey, but I'm joking. But if you agree with me about, you know, I feel like they're kind of phoning it in here with these mechanics where it seems like they're like, well, if we can avoid coming up with a new mechanic, let's just reskin a mechanic that already exists or take a mechanic from somewhere else and just use that. And if you, like me, are not a fan of that, let them know. Because my point with that, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but I'm saying I can do that. You can do that. Anyone who's been a dungeon master or a game master for very long at all can reskin abilities and, you know, oh, this ability, instead of doing acid damage, does fire damage. Or, hey, I'm going to take this ability that the life cleric gets and give it to the protection cleric, right? Like, we can do that. We don't need professional designers to show us how to steal an ability from one place and use it somewhere else, or how to reskin an ability. We need them to create new stuff for us. So if they're going to put out a book of new archetypes and new player character options and expect us to pay our hard-earned money for it, I think it should be truly new mechanics and not just recycled mechanics that we've seen before, just in different combinations. You know, again, we can do that. The community can do that. Third-party publishers can do that, right? Anybody can do that. We need the pros. We need the people at Wizards to give us new things to play with, not just use the same blocks and put them together in different ways. We can do that ourselves. So if you agree with me on that, please take the survey and please let Wizards know how you feel. All right. So I mentioned just a minute ago, I mentioned Volo's Guide to Monsters. I finally got my hand on a copy of this and I have been devouring it. And I will say I had fairly high hopes for this book. I was pretty excited for it. And for the most part, so far, I haven't read the whole thing cover to cover yet, but for the most part so far, I have not been disappointed. So I am definitely going to discuss Volo's Guide to Monsters on the show. My question for you is, what form would you like this discussion to take? Okay, would you rather that I review Volo's Guide to Monsters in an episode like I reviewed Curse of Strahd, Storm King's Thunder, the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, just do, you know, my usual review that I do, or either instead of or in addition to that, would you like me to say, perhaps do a segment every episode or every few episodes where I take a chapter of Volo's Guide or I take a section of Volo's Guide and discuss that and really drill into that in more detail? This is an idea that was suggested to me by Boz Bunnick. I made a post in the community recently asking for feedback on the show and ideas of ways to improve the show or different topics to talk about or just any feedback that people have. And Boz replied and talked about this thing that people do, which I didn't even know about this until Boz told me, on like forums and whatnot called Let's Read or something. I forget what he called it. But basically where someone on a forum will take a book and go through it bit by bit and discuss it. I'd never heard of this. I didn't know what he was talking about. So I found one of these threads on a forum and oh my God, I cannot believe people read this stuff. Oh my God, how do people have time to read this stuff? But I thought, I mean, obviously some people really dig that. And I think if you're going to do something like that, it would be much better to do that on a podcast than on a blog or on a forum where people have to read walls of text about what you think about this particular chapter or section from a book. I think it would be much more entertaining and absorbable in a podcast format. My question, though, is how many people really would be interested in that? So, for instance, in Volo's Guide to Monsters, the first part of the book goes into quite a bit of detail on a handful of iconic monsters from D&D. So we have a section all about beholders, for instance. Everything from beholder psychology to beholder culture to what their lairs are like, what their tactics are like in combat, how they use their various abilities outside of combat, things like that. So I think Volo's guide would actually be really conducive to these kinds of discussions where maybe for a segment in one episode, I just talk about the section on beholders and kind of give you kind of a broad overview of what kind of stuff is there and then give some discussion on, you know, what I think of it, what's really awesome, what maybe isn't so awesome, what you can use and how you can use it. So for instance, part of the discussion on the beholders is about how beholders can fly. And so how they might design their lairs to capitalize on the fact that they can fly and someone invading their lair may not be able to. And, you know, obviously, if you're going to have an encounter with a beholder in its lair, you can totally use that. But you can also use that with any kind of intelligent creature that can fly and that shapes its own lair. You know, and most of these sections in Volo's guide on the various monsters are like that, where it's like, not only can you use this for this particular monster, but you can also extrapolate and use the same ideas for other monsters. So I think Volo's guide would be an excellent book to do this with. And, you know, we could dig into some of these sections in great detail. I don't know how many people would be interested in that. So let me know, you know, later in the show, I'll tell you all the ways you can get a hold of me. You can email me, gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can Twitter me, @LexStarwalker. Tweet me, @LexStarwalker. Leave a comment in the show notes at StarwalkerStudios.com. There's comment in the community on Google Plus. There's lots of ways. And I'd love to hear from you. Would you be interested in kind of more in-depth discussion on various sections of Volo's guide? And if you are interested, would you like that instead of the regular review or in addition to the regular review? Let me know. I'd love to hear from you about this. All right. I've been doing every once in a while some polls on the community for Game Master's Journey. And one that I did a little while ago that was kind of fun was, what's your favorite polyhedral? Now, unfortunately, the polls on Google Plus only let you have 5 options. So I couldn't put all the possible polyhedrals on there. So I put up the D20, the D12, the D10, the D8, and the D4. I couldn't do D100 and I couldn't do D6. I'm okay with not doing D100 because I don't know. Unless you're playing something like Rollmaster where like you use percentile all the time. Like for instance, in D&D, you're mainly using percentile when you're rolling for treasure and seems like that's about it, or random encounter, stuff like that. So percentile seems to be, at least in 5th edition, more something used by a GM than, you know, I don't see players rolling percentile that much. D6, I wasn't too worried about not having that as an option because D6s are boring. I mean, you can roll D6s if you're playing Monopoly, right? I guess it is a polyhedral because it has multiple sides, but I don't think a lot of gamers would really, I mean, when you talk polyhedral dice, you're usually talking dice other than D6s, right? Because D6s are like the generic die that everybody knows about. So D6 was not an option. D100 was not an option. I think there was one person in the comments that voted for the D6. So I got 55 votes, so maybe 56 votes. One of those was for the D6. So out of the other 55 votes, 51% of the people who voted said the D20 was their favorite. And that was a pretty clear winner. Our next biggest percentage after 51% for the D20 is tied at 20% for the D12 and the D10. So just over half the people prefer the D20. That's their favorite die. After that, second place was tied for the D12 and the D10 at 20%. And then 5% of people voted for the D4, or as I like to call them, Caltrops. And 4% voted for the D8. So there you go. That's the polyhedrals most people are fond of. And you know, I'm not really surprised by any of this. I expected the D20 to win, and it did. And the reason I expected it to win is just because that's what D&D uses. You know, it's your main die, and D&D always has been since original D&D. And a lot of us, that's our gateway game, right, is D&D. Even those of us that don't play D&D anymore, a lot of us, that was the first RPG we tried. So it's not surprising to me that the D20 holds a special place in a lot of gamers' hearts. So interesting stuff. So I think we're caught up on the polls now that I've done. So I'll have to do another one soon. So that's another thing you can let me know is if you have an idea for a cool little poll question like this, it's RPG related, that I could ask the community, let me know, and maybe I'll use your poll idea next.
This is Shane from the Total Party Thrill Podcast, and you're listening to Lex Starwalker on Game Master's Journey.
I want to give a quick shout out to the patrons of Starwalker Studios. The support of the patrons makes this show possible. If you enjoy Game Master's Journey and you'd like to give a little back, becoming a patron is a great way to do so. Patrons get some cool perks like game material I make for Primordia and access to a special monthly podcast I produce just for the patrons. I'd also like to give a huge shout out and thank you to my tier 4 patron, Mr. Steve Strickland. Let's hear it for Steve.
Yeah.
Yes.
You the man.
Thank you so much, Steve, and thank you to all the patrons. You can find out more about becoming a patron by clicking on the Patreon button at the top of the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. Our main topic today comes to us courtesy of listener and fellow game master Thomas Chapman. And Thomas Chapman says, I have a group where each PC has something that drives them. I'm wondering if you might have a discussion on how to build adventures off of the characters instead of throwing characters into an adventure that you made. For example, in Critical Role, Matt Mercer has a story he's telling, but every so often a PC's story becomes the adventure. So I want to thank you so much for sending in that question, Thomas. I think that's a great topic to discuss on the show today. And I think I'm going to kind of divide this up into three sections here. So a big part of this is involving the backstory of the player characters and bringing that into the adventure. And to that, I think there's two main parts of that. First is soliciting the right kind and the right amount of background information from your players. And so kind of from for the players out there, how you can supply your dungeon master with a backstory that is going to be helpful, that is going to enable your dungeon master or your game master to pull in elements of this backstory into the main narrative of the game. And then from the GM perspective, the second part of our discussion will be, you know, how do you as a GM, once you have those backstories, how do you actually bring those things into the game and make that part of your main narrative? And then the third part of this, I think, is beyond just pulling in things from the player characters' backstories, also pulling in things that come up during actual gameplay and paying attention to not only what's happening with the player characters during the course of the game, but also things that the players and their characters say and talk about. So let's start with the first element of this, which is kind of more for players than GMs, although GMs, it's good to know this too, so that you can know how to ask your players for what you want and let your players know exactly what you want. And that's, you know, getting the right kind of backstory information and the right amount of information. So I've noticed, you know, to just really generalize here, there seems to be two kind of basic trends with players when it comes to what they're going to give you as far as a backstory to their character. And again, I'm generalizing a lot here. So I'm not saying every player is going to fit into one of these two categories, but a lot of them do. So the first is a player who gives you nothing or next to nothing. So this character or this player may literally give you nothing as far as a backstory, or maybe just like a few sentences, or maybe, you know, they give you quite a bit as far as words on a page, but there's nothing there that you can really use. The second type of player is kind of at the other extreme, where they will give you pages and pages of prose, all kinds of backstory stuff. The problem is, you know, like I already kind of said, these are two extremes, right? One player gives you nothing or practically nothing. The other player gives you a shit ton of stuff. Neither of these is helpful to a GM. So how can we as players give our GMs what they can actually use? So the first problem is giving your GM too much backstory. And I'm talking about giving your GM pages of stuff. And the problem with this is the GM has to read all that, which is going to take time. And even kind of a bigger problem is the GM has to sort through all those words, all those pages of words, to try to find the few bits that are actually going to be relevant that the GM can actually use in the story. And by relevant, I mean things that can serve as character hooks or plot hooks to bring your character's backstory into the adventure. So, you know, wading through 2 to 4 pages, say, of prose, trying to find the couple sentences that really matter is difficult and it's time consuming. You know, your GM's probably very busy. You know, don't waste your GM's time, right? Also, chances are slim. If you give your GM 4 pages of backstory, chances are pretty slim, I think, that if I'm the GM, the couple sentences that I decide out of that 4 pages are the most important and things that I'm going to try to bring into the story. Chances are pretty slim that I'm going to choose the same two sentences that you, the player, would choose, right? Because you're not telling me what's important. You're just like, you know, puking out a bunch of information and I have to try to decode out of that what's important. And, you know, I'd say there's a good chance that our lines are going to get crossed and I'm going to think something's important that you didn't think was important, or I'm going to miss something that you thought was important because I didn't think it was important or it just got lost. So there is such a thing as too much when it comes to backstory. Of course, there's such a thing as too little. If you don't give me anything, there's nothing for me to work with, right? Although, you know, it depends. And, you know, like everything, there's no like hard, fast rules, right? It all depends. It depends on what you want as a player. It depends what you want as a GM, right? It depends what everybody wants. You know, some players at certain times just want to play a character. They don't care about the backstory. They don't, you know, they just want to jump into the action and have fun. And that's fine. You know, if you have a player that doesn't give you anything, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. The only problem I would say is if as a player, you want that spotlight and you want like your character to kind of be at the center of the action for an adventure, but at the same time, you're not giving your GM anything to work with. You're just expecting the GM to do everything. That's a problem. So, you know, if you're the player and you're like, I really want my character to at least at certain times be kind of the focus of the story, then you need to give your DM something to work with. You can't just expect your GM to come up with everything for you, because what's going to happen, I can promise you, is most likely at least one or some of the other players are going to give your GM things to work with, and your GM is going to go for that low-hanging fruit first, probably, right? So as a GM, it's a lot easier for me to take character number one, who gave me some character hooks and their backstory that I can work with, and do something with that than it is to take character number two, who gave me nothing, and I have to totally come up with something, and I have no idea how the player is going to like that, right? If I use a hook that player number one gave me, I can be pretty confident that the player is going to be on board with that because they came up with the hook. So presumably they're interested in that. But player two didn't give me anything. So anything that I do come up with, I don't know if they're going to like it or not. So I'm going to focus on player one and all the other players that gave me something to work with before I ever get around to player number two, who gave me nothing. And let's be real, chances are good I'll never get around to player two that gave me nothing, because another part of this is player two is kind of telling me that they don't care. Either they don't want that spotlight or they just don't care if they get the spotlight, or they want the spotlight, but they're not willing to do anything to facilitate me giving them that spotlight. So in any of those situations, that player getting the spotlight is not going to be very high on my priority list as a GM. All right. So we've established that as a player, you don't want to give your GM too much. You don't want to give them too little. So what should you give your GM as a player? And as a GM, what should you be asking your players for so that you're not either underwhelmed or overwhelmed? So for me as a GM, the ideal backstory that I can receive from a player would be a small paragraph or two giving me the gist of what your character's life was like up to the beginning of the adventure. Where did you grow up? What did you do? What were some events that shaped who you are? Just a paragraph or two in small paragraphs, just giving me the general ideas of that. Okay, who are you? Where did you come from? How did you get here? Kind of thing. Then I would want 1 to 3 sentences or bullet points that are hooks from your character's background that you would like me to try to use at some point in the campaign. Okay, so what is a hook? What do I mean by a hook? Okay, when I talk about a hook, I'm talking about a character hook or a plot hook, whatever you want to call it, which is you give me something from your backstory that's a loose end, a dangling plot thread that I can pick up as a GM and do something with, okay? So I think the easiest way to explain this for anyone who might be confused about what I'm talking about when I'm talking about giving the GM a good hook is with some examples, all right? So here's an example of a hook that a player might give me as part of their backstory. My twin sister disappeared when I was a small child. Everyone else has long since assumed that she's dead, but I know in my heart that she's still alive out there somewhere. I have left my sleepy village in search for her. So you see there that not only am I telling the GM that I have a sister, but you know, I'm not just giving the GM some random fact or not random fact, but I'm not just giving the GM a fact from my background. I'm giving the GM a hook because my sister is presumed dead. I believe that she's not dead, and I have left my home in search for her. That's a plot hook, right? Because as a GM, I now have this dangling thread of this missing sister that I can use in a future story. So you can also see that as a player, I'm giving the GM some clues as to what I want from the game, right? So be careful as a player, you know, when you're coming up with your hooks, you know, I think this would be pretty natural, but just to kind of state the obvious, maybe in case it's not obvious, you know, make sure that the hooks are things that you're wanting to explore, right? Don't give the GM a hook about something that you have no interest in. You know, giving the GM the hook of my sister's presumed dead and but I think she's missing isn't a good hook if you have really no interest in pursuing that storyline, right? So the hooks that you're giving the GM should be saying, you know, this is something I'd like to see, you know, so this player, I would assume as GM, would like, you know, a session or an adventure or whatever part of the campaign to involve trying to find this sister. So maybe doing some investigation or maybe just talking to people everywhere he goes asking, you know, have you seen this girl kind of thing or something like that. But I would assume from this hook that the player wants me to use this, right? So as a GM, I would definitely talk to this player to get a clear idea of what they want, right? Have a conversation because, you know, this kind of hook to me, it seems obvious that the player has something pretty specific in mind, you know, but that's probably a good assumption to make with any hook a player gives you. They've already got some ideas of how they'd like to see this play out. So talk to your players about it. Say, hey, you know, I see here you gave me this hook of, you know, your sister is assumed dead, but you think she's still alive somewhere. How do you see this playing out, or how would you like this to play out? And the player may be like, I don't care, surprise me. And that's great. You know, that's fine. But the player might be like, oh, you know, I think it'd be cool if she is still alive. And at some point during the campaign, I hear a rumor, or maybe I see her face in a crowd or something, and I have an opportunity to try to find her or something like that. Or the player might be like, well, I think it'd be cool if my sister actually is dead, but just my character doesn't believe that she's dead. And at some point in the campaign, I find evidence that she's dead and my character has to deal with that. Because the thing about these hooks is they're setting up arcs for the character, right? And if the player is giving you a hook and they're setting up this arc, it behooves you as a GM to find out in the very beginning, before you even start thinking about what you're going to do with this hook, find out if the player already has some ideas of where they want this arc to take them. Which is not to say that you're a slave to what the player wants to do. I mean, it's up to you as a GM, you know, what you do with this hook. But I would definitely, you know, think about what the player says. And if you can accommodate them, you know, do so. Because they're going to enjoy that a lot more. But of course, you know, you want to have some surprises, you know. And it really depends on how specific the player is. You know, if the player is like, I want to find out that my sister is alive and she's held prisoner by the local baron and he has her as a concubine or something like that, you know, well, maybe you don't want to do that exactly, because if only because then it's not going to be a surprise. And even though the player thinks that they want this very specific thing, if you just give them the specific thing that they asked for, chances are really good that they're not going to be satisfied by that, because it's like, oh, you just gave me what I asked for. You know, that's no fun. I mean, that's why we wrap birthday presents, right? You know, part of the fun is the surprise, right? If that weren't true, we wouldn't wrap presents, right? We just say, hey, here's the thing I got you. But part of the fun is being surprised and not knowing what's going to happen. So if a player does give you something very specific, I wouldn't use the very specific thing, but I would keep, you know, I would try to suss out what is important to the player about this and try to use that. So in this example, when the player's like, oh, you know, I think it'd be cool if she was held prisoner by the Baron, blah, 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 blah. I would ask some questions and try to get at, you know, what do you really want? So maybe without revealing what I'm thinking I'm going to do. So I might be like, okay, so what's important to you about this? Is it that you want this Baron to be involved somehow? Is it that you want it to involve this particular NPC? Or is it just that you think it would be cool if your sister was in a situation where you had to rescue her and the Baron was just an idea that you had? Because the player might be like, oh, well, I just think it'd be cool if I could rescue her, you know, and then you could be like, okay, so the player doesn't really care if it's the Baron or not. So I could make it be someone else, like a demon or something, so that I can kind of catch the player by surprise and he doesn't see it coming. Or if, on the other hand, the player's like, well, I really want it to involve this Baron, well, then maybe I can come up with something that involves the Baron, but maybe, you know, she's not a prisoner, or maybe I can play with that assumption, right? So the if I use the Baron, then the player's going to assume that she's this prisoner because that's what the player asked for, or that's what the player suggested. But maybe it appears that she's a prisoner, but she's really not. Maybe she's the Baron's lover out of her own free will. Maybe the Baron is her prisoner, you know? So communication is always key. So I would definitely, you know, you get these hooks in written form from your players. I would definitely follow up and ask questions and try to get what is the player wanting from this? Because they probably have some kind of idea. It might be vague, it might be specific, but they probably have some kind of idea of where they want this hook to go. And I would find that out and take that under advisement. Again, not necessarily doing exactly what they ask, and probably you don't want to do exactly what they ask, but trying to keep the spirit of it, trying to keep the elements that are really important to them, but doing enough yourself creatively that it's still going to be a surprise and they're not going to see you coming. All right, so another example of a hook, just to you probably are with me now, but just in case, here's another possible hook. I was an innkeeper until the fateful night my inn burned down. I was forced to turn to a life of adventuring. I'm convinced that the fire at the inn was no accident, and I'm always on the lookout for any hint as to who was responsible. So again, you know, this is something that I as a GM could use. I could say, okay, so, if the story ever takes us to this character's hometown where the inn burned down, I could maybe have the player characters overhear a conversation or something that provides a possible clue as to what happened. And then that's something that the players can pursue if they want, you know, or, you know, they could find out something somewhere else. It wouldn't have to be in that town. But, you know, this is something that the player character has given me that I can at some point somehow pull into the story. So that's a good hook. Here's another example. I was once romantically involved with another adventurer and things ended badly. We have unfinished business and I know that one day our paths will cross again. So you see that this example is a more open-ended hook than the other two. There's a lot left open here that isn't defined, okay? This hook doesn't tell me who this other adventurer was. This hook doesn't tell me how exactly things ended badly. It also doesn't tell me what the unfinished business specifically is. So that's a lot open. Now, I would talk to the player again. Could be that the player has ideas for these things and they're just not putting it in the hook. Maybe they were trying to keep it brief. Or it could be that the player doesn't have answers and they want to be surprised. So I would ask the player, okay, you say you were romantically involved with an adventurer. Do you have any ideas who this person was or what type of person it was or anything like that? And the player might be like, I don't really know, but I'm thinking it was a woman and she was a half elf, maybe. Or the player might have something very specific, but I would find out before I got too involved in coming up with something myself. Because if the player does have an idea, you know, this is something where I would totally use what the player has, because it's like, well, you're talking about the character you were romantic with. So you're the best person to decide what that character was like if you want to. The other thing that's kind of left open here is how did things end bad? How did things end? So I would talk to the player. And this is something specifically that I would ask the player, do you have an idea for this? And if they do, then I would just run with that. If they didn't, instead of me just coming up with something, because then again, this is something very intimate to their character, I would want to cooperatively come up with something with the player. I wouldn't want to just myself come up with how their relationship ended badly. I'd rather do that together with a player and maybe throw out some ideas of, well, maybe you cheated on her, or maybe she cheated on you, or maybe she thought you cheated on her, but you really didn't. Or maybe you got in an argument about, you know, and figure out with the player together what this was. And then the other thing that's kind of left open here was what the unfinished business is. So again, I would ask the player, what's the unfinished business? And come up with that with the player. You know, the other kind of open thing here is how are your paths going to cross? So this is something that's more, I feel this is in the realm of me as the GM, because this is something in the future. You know, the other stuff is more backstory. Who was your lover? Why did you break up? What's your unfinished business? That's in the realm of the player. If the player has ideas for that, I'm going to use those ideas. If the player doesn't have ideas, I'm going to come up with ideas with the player, because that's solely in their sphere of influence, because that's their character's history. But when and how their paths cross again, that's GM territory. That's in the future. So I would ask the player, do you have any thoughts about this? Is there anything in particular you'd like to see? And I would take that under advisement. But again, you know, like I discussed before, I wouldn't want to do exactly that because I don't want the player to see me coming. And I would not feel bound by that because I might want to come up with something different. So, you know, again, if I'm a player, how do I come up with a backstory that the GM can use? Say, first of all, keep it short and sweet. This is not the time to start that novel you've been wanting to write. Or start the novel, but don't give the novel to the GM. Now, I want to clarify here. I'm talking about the information that you're providing to the GM at the beginning of the campaign, like during session zero, for, you know, character hooks specifically. So if your GM is asking you for, hey, give me something from your background that I can maybe pull into the story later, that's what I'm talking about. If you want to write a 20-page backstory for your character, that's awesome. Do it. Go for it. And share it with your GM, because your GM may want to see that, but do not expect your GM to read the whole thing. Do not expect your GM to read the whole thing before the first session. And do not expect the GM to magically know what out of that however many pages is important to you and you want to see in the campaign. So in addition to your magnum opus, give the GM the paragraph or two with the few bullet points, which is what your GM is asking for. So the GM can focus on that and use that for preparing the first few sessions and can get to your magnum opus if or when she has time. So, you know, when you give the GM your backstory or your character hooks, whatever you want to call it, here are some guidelines that I would recommend that I like to see for my players. Again, less than a page total. Whether you're typing it or you're writing it by hand, if you're getting close to filling out a whole page, go ahead and finish what you're doing, but keep that for you, you know, or give it to the GM and say, hey, you know, feel free to read this if or when you have time, but then go back through that and you pick out the important parts that you want the GM to focus on. Take that however many pages and boil it down to a handful of sentences or bullet points that are like, here's important things from my character's history that I want to come into play. So less than a single page. I think the best format for this is bullet points. And each of those bullet points is basically a character hook. Should only take you, say, 1 to 3 short sentences to explain that hook. And I would say no more than 2 or 3 bullet points total. No more than 2 or 3 hooks total. And really, all the GM really needs is 1, maybe 2. I'm saying 2 or 3 because then the GM can kind of choose the one that either fits the story best or the one the GM will think is the most fun. But, you know, let's say you're playing in a campaign and you've got 4 players. Unless your campaign spans years, the GM is probably not going to be able to pull in 3 character hooks for each player. Maybe 1, well, definitely 1, maybe 2, right? So, you know, if you give your GM 10 character hooks, there's no way the GM's going to be able to use all those if the GM's going to give equal time to all the characters. So really drill down to what's important. Give your GM 1 or 2 or at most 3 hooks that are the important ones. You can have more hooks than that and supply them as needed when the GM says, hey, you got anything else? But start out with the ones that are the most important, the ones that you really want to see. So again, you know, what I mean by character hook is a dangling plot thread that the GM can use. So, you know, let's go back to the examples. So I had the example of the twin sister that disappeared. Everybody thinks she's dead, but you think she's still alive. You know, this is a great character hook. And it's the kind I especially like as a GM because I know that this player is going to have a lot of buy-in with this hook. All I have to do is provide a glimpse of the missing sister in a crowd or an NPC that claims to know something about her. And I know that at least one of the players is going to be totally invested in what's happening now because this is important to this player, presumably. When you have one player that's really bought into what's going on, she's going to tend to pull the other players along, either literally like, hey guys, let's go check this out, or just emotionally, you know, excitement is contagious. If you got one player that's like really into what's going on, the other players will tend to kind of get more into it too. So a hook like this with the missing sister, I would totally tie that into my main story. If I had a nemesis for the PCs planned, then I would tie that in somehow. Maybe the nemesis has the sister. You know, always be on the lookout for opportunities to do a good plot twist and not play in the player's expectations. So maybe the nemesis is holding the sister prisoner, or maybe the sister's in love with the nemesis and won't leave him of her own free will. Or maybe the nemesis is actually working for the sister, and the sister is really the big, bad, evil guy in the campaign. Guy, obviously, I'm using as a neutral pronoun. or something like that. One of the other hooks we had was the innkeeper who's in burned down. So, you know, this hook tells me a little of your character's history that you used to own an inn. But more importantly, there's a hook here. Someone set fire to your inn and you want to find out who it was. So you see how I can, in some future game session, provide a lead to who might have set the fire to the inn. And this particular character and this particular player is going to be instantly engaged with that. As soon as I mention the inn fire, that player is going to be paying attention and is going to want to pursue that. I always say that I can't predict what the players will do, and that's usually true. But this is an instance that can be an exception to that, where you can predict with a pretty high degree of certainty, generally speaking, what the PCs are going to do. If the PCs meet someone who mentions this in fire and they realize this person might know something about it, then that particular player, at least, is going to want to investigate it. I can count on that. Now, maybe they won't do it this session, but at some point, that player will convince the others to pursue this plot thread. If there's a certain place the PCs need to go, or a certain NPC they need to talk to in order to advance the main story that we're telling, then tying that place or that NPC to one of these character hooks from a PC's backstory is an excellent way to help ensure that the PCs actually go to the place or seek out the NPC. And it's a way to do it that doesn't seem so heavy-handed and doesn't make your game feel so railroaded. We have the hook of once being romantically involved with another adventurer. It ended badly, but your paths are going to cross again someday. So, you know, this character hook really comes to us in the form of an NPC, namely the adventurer that the PC was involved with. So here, you know, again, I talk to the player and get any ideas they have about who this NPC is or what they're like. And I would want the NPC that I come up with to align with any expectations or ideas the player already has. The better job I can do at making this NPC what the player wants, the more effective this NPC is going to be as a hook when the NPC shows up, and the more likely the PC is going to be to want to interact with this NPC. Now, I can put an obstacle between the player character and this NPC, and I can be pretty sure that the players will do everything they can to overcome that obstacle. So again, this is a way that you can direct the game where you want it to go. You know, if you want the player characters to fight a monster or something, put that monster between them and this NPC that was a past lover of the player character. So maybe this NPC that the PC used to be involved with is, again, the prisoner of my bad guy. So now it's not some stranger at risk, but an NPC from the player's character's past. And that's a great way to get your players to hate your bad guy even more. Or maybe the NPC is hard to get to in a social way instead of a physical one. So maybe the PC sees this NPC in the town, but the NPC is a high-ranking noble and is surrounded by guards, and they can't talk to her. The PCs might have to gain access to this NPC, and maybe they don't have the social standing to do so. So they might have to disguise themselves or bribe someone or something like that. Of course, once the PCs interact with the NPC, there's lots of room for drama here. You know, perhaps that old flame will rekindle and they'll get back together. Perhaps the NPC will manipulate the PC and use him as a pawn in some scheme of hers. I mean, the possibilities here are practically endless. So I think you can see here how this is a kind of a symbiotic relationship here. You know, as a player, you're coming up with good plot hooks and you're giving the DM or the GM what she needs, no more, no less. And, you know, you're going to be well served if or when the GM uses these plot hooks, because presumably these are things that are important to you that you want to explore about your character. So, you know, those will be great game sessions for you when these plot hooks come into play. And from the GM's perspective, you know, you're getting ideas that you can use to help generate new stories. These can be great sources for subplots for your game. So not everything's, you know, directed towards the main storyline, makes it seem more realistic, makes it seem like these player characters are real people that have, you know, multiple things going on at once. And it's also nice as a GM because you can be fairly confident that when you use one of these hooks and you do bring it in, that at least one of the players is going to be super engaged and on board with that. And it's going to help kind of supercharge the game session. So I think everybody at the table benefits from being able to do this, with the players giving the GM good hooks that they can use, and the GM using those hooks to enrich the story.
My
My favorite part of the show is when I hear from listener GMs like you. If you have feedback for the show, whether it's a comment on today's topic or an idea for a future topic, I'd love to hear from you. There are a lot of great ways to get a hold of me. You can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com, follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker, Google Plus Lex Starwalker, and finally, you can visit the website starwalkerstudios.com to get links to my Patreon page, YouTube channel, and more. All right, so we start our discussion today talking about how players can provide their GMs with a good backstory and character hooks that the GM can use in the campaign. Once you have a couple hooks as a GM like this for each character, it's then just a matter of finding the right times to work them into the story. So if you keep these hooks in the back of your head when you're planning and when you're running your adventures, you can often find ways to tie them in, either connecting them to the main story or using them as ways to propel the PCs along the main story, or using them as subplots. You know, and a great example of, you know, this idea of subplots is, you know, a lot of our TV shows these days. You know, you look at a show like Supernatural. It's a perfect example. Every season of Supernatural, there is some kind of overarching story for that season. So for instance, one season, I think it was last season, we had this storyline of the darkness, this primordial darkness that existed before creation has been loosed upon the world, and the heroes of the story are trying to stop it, right? But not every episode of that season had to deal with that darkness. Every once in a while, they'd have an episode where they just go to a haunted house and bust a ghost or whatever. Didn't really have anything to do with the main story. Sometimes they would tie it in some way, sometimes they wouldn't. But that's a side plot, you know? And any of these more kind of episodic TV shows these days that you watch will have that. You know, they'll have the storyline for that season that they're advancing, but not every episode will advance that storyline. Every once in a while, you'll have an episode that doesn't have anything to do with the main storyline. And you can do the same thing in your games. So my first piece of advice for GMs when it comes to using these plot hooks that the players has given you is to pace yourself. You don't have to use them right away, and you don't have to use them all right away or all at once. Choose your moments. Don't force it. Wait for the right time. Wait for the right opportunity when it really fits, when it really makes sense, when it's really going to add to the story. Don't try to force it, because if you force it, it's probably going to feel forced, which is going to kind of ruin it. These character hooks are great tools to get the PCs back on track when they've gone astray, or just as a way to get them back on the main story arc. So maybe they've gone off on a subplot and that's over, and you need a way to bring things back to the main story. Well, maybe look to these character hooks. See if there's a character hook that you could use to steer them back to that main story. These are great ways to lead PCs to a new location that you need them to go to get them to enter a dungeon, to get them to interact with a particular NPC, and things like that. And again, these are ways that you can get these things that you need to happen in the campaign to happen while making it seem like it's player-directed all the time, because the player characters will think that they chose to go talk to that NPC because it involved one of the player characters' hooks. It will seem less like the GM wanted us to go talk to that NPC than it would if you came up with some other way to maneuver them into talking with the NPC. If you can pull in one of these hooks from their backstories, it's going to feel like it's player-directed, even if it's not. You can also use these hooks to set the player characters at odds with one another if you're interested in that kind of thing. So you could, for instance, bring in the hooks of two different PCs at the same time, but they only have time to pursue one of them right now. So they have to decide as a group which one they're going to go after, or maybe they split up and try to do them both at the same time. Either way could be dramatic and fun. Now, again, you know, not all GMs like having players at odds or having player characters at odds or both. And not all players enjoy that. So, you know, you got to kind of know your group and know if this would work well for your group or not, but in a group of mature players who can separate player and character and who can get into the kind of drama that can happen within the party, you know, this kind of stuff can be a lot of fun. These hooks are also great tools to use if or when your game is losing momentum. So maybe the players aren't sure what to do or where to go. Maybe they're arguing and can't come up with a consensus, and it's just getting bogged down in constant planning and just going in circles, going nowhere. Maybe it's just one of those nights where it seems like no one's really into it, and you're trying to find a way to get everyone engaged in what's going on. Bringing in one of these character hooks is often just what the doctor ordered here. It gives direction to a group lacking in direction. And if no one's engaged, the hook will at the very least engage the player that it's related to. And that player's enthusiasm will tend to be contagious. Once you get one player excited about the game, the other players will tend to get excited too. You can also bring in multiple hooks at once that, as opposed to being competing with one another, that they can tackle together. You know, have a few of your subplot threads converge into one thing that they can do, and now you have buy-in for every player that has a hook feeding into this event. And that can be an awesome way to kind of light the fire under your campaign again. So this brings me to another point. Always be on the lookout for ways to tie hooks from various PCs together. This helps to cement the group together, and it also makes those hooks even more effective because they're going to affect more than one player. So maybe one PC has the missing sister, and the other PC is searching for who set fire to her inn. Maybe it turns out that the missing sister is traveling with the person who burned the inn down. Or maybe the sister was the one that burned the inn down. Obviously, you want to be careful with this because you can overdo it. And if you do overdo it, it will become very contrived feeling. And, you know, you're going to lose your players. You're going to lose suspension of disbelief if you're too heavy-handed with this. So my advice is, as far as this is, look out for connections that just jump out at you. When you're looking at these plot hooks for the various PCs, look for any possible connections that just leap out at you, like, oh, these just are made to fit together. That kind of thing. Run with those as opposed to trying to force different hooks together. So, you know, look for connections that seem to already be there or could be there and explore those, more so than trying to force connections that aren't really there. Now, another thing you want to think about kind of more long-term or over the course of your campaign is to try to give all the players equal attention if you can, assuming that they all gave you character hooks. If a particular player doesn't give you anything, then obviously you can't pull anything from the nothing that they gave you. And, you know, personally, I would assume that the player either isn't interested in that element of the game and they don't care about their backstory coming into play, or they don't care enough to actually do anything about it. And it might sound harsh to you, but as a GM, if you as a player don't care enough about your backstory coming into play to give me a few hooks, then honestly, as a GM, I don't really care enough about your backstory coming into play to bother coming up with anything myself. You know, I mean, it's a give and take here. You know, we're doing something cooperative. It's not all on the GM all the time. So, you know, don't be afraid as a GM, just total aside here, but don't be afraid as a GM to put some responsibility on your players and expect them to live up to it. You know, so if you're asking for hooks from your players and some of your players don't give them to you, don't feel obligated to come up with something for them. They had their chance and they didn't take it. You know, focus on the players who did give you hooks. And maybe when the other players see the cool things that are happening, they'll suddenly be motivated to come up with hooks of their own. And if they do that, then you can start working those in. But don't make more work for yourself. Focus on the players that are helping you to help them. But assuming that all the players do give you something, try over the course of the campaign to give each character equal attention. It can be easy, and I've done this myself, it can be really easy as a GM to focus too much on a particular character's hook because you're really excited about that hook. Maybe it plays really well into the story you want to tell, or maybe just something about that hook just gives you a million ideas and you're super excited about it. Now, definitely run with it. Definitely go where your excitement takes you. You know, the game will benefit from you focusing on what you're excited about right now. And here's another aside, okay? If you have an idea as a GM that you are excited about, use it now. Don't be like, oh, well, we're at third level. When the player characters are 15th level, I have this great thing I'm going to do. Don't do that. Use it now. Find a way to use that idea now. Use it in the next session because you don't know what's going to happen. You may never get to 15th level to use that cool idea, or by the time you get to 15th level, the events of the campaign have changed things so much that your idea won't work anymore, or maybe you're just not excited about it anymore because it's been a year and you don't care anymore. So if you have an idea that you're excited about, find a way to use it right now. Don't wait. So anyway, back to where I was at. You know, it can be easy as a GM to have a particular hook that you're really excited about it and tend to focus on that to the exclusion of the other player characters. And you want to avoid that. Now, again, I'm talking over the course of a campaign. So it's totally fine if a given session is all about one player character's hook. In fact, that's a good thing. It's even okay if a whole series of sessions or a whole adventure is really about one player character's hook. That's fine as long as over the course of the entire campaign, its equal treatment is, you know, as close as you can manage to each character, or at least proportional to how much they gave you, right? If you've got a bunch of player characters that gave you three hooks and you've got one player character that gave you one, well, obviously the player character that gave you one hook isn't going to get as much spotlight as all the other guys that gave you three, right? I mean, it's kind of common sense, I think. But again, remember, you have the whole campaign for this. Don't worry about giving the players equal coverage in any given session. Don't worry about that. Or in a month or anything like that. Think of it. Think of the campaign as a whole. So maybe the first few months of play is focused on finding the missing sister, which is the hook for PC number one. And then maybe the next couple months of play after that is all about going after the inn arson, which is a hook for PC number two. And so on. So, you know, as long as, you know, the coverage is equal overall over the course of the campaign, and of course, as long as you finish the campaign, everybody gets equal treatment, everybody has their moment in the sun, and everybody's happy, including you as a GM. Have you checked out the Game Master's Journey community on Google Plus yet? The Game Master's Journey community is a great place to bounce ideas back and forth with other listener GMs. You can comment on the show episodes, share your own homebrew world, and ask questions of the many experienced GMs that are a part of our community. So I hope you'll check out our community, and I hope you'll join us there. You can find a link to the Game Master's Journey community in the show notes for this episode over at starwalkerstudios.com/Game Master's Journey. For the third part of today's discussion, I thought we'd move a little bit beyond just the backstory and using hooks that players give you in the backstory to bring that character into focus in your game to, you know, using information that you get during running the game itself. You can learn a lot as a GM just by listening. Listen to your players. Listen to your players when they're just shooting the shit during the game session, when they're talking in character or out of character, and just listen to anything that kind of grabs your ear and maybe gives you an idea or sounds like something you might want to explore and write it down. So, you know, some examples, player characters or players might discuss their backstories or, you know, even things about their characters that aren't in their backstories. And through telling each other about their characters and stuff, they may reveal things that you think, oh, that could be a cool hook for a future adventure or an NPC or something like that. You know, write it down. Players may discuss places they're interested in going. They may discuss creatures they're interested in encountering or NPCs they're interested in meeting. They might discuss spells they're interested in learning or magic items they're interested in finding, all kinds of stuff. You know, and if you pay attention to these kinds of things and you take a note of anything that kind of jumps out at you as, hey, that sounds like a cool idea or that'd be fun to do, then you have you know, a list of things that you can pull from when you're trying to come up with something for the next session. And, you know, when you can pull this off, it's really cool, because a lot of times what will happen, especially if it takes you a little while to work it in, is the player won't even remember saying anything about it. Right. So let's say you're playing in the Forgotten Realms. Okay. And you're running a game in the Forgotten Realms, and the players are just sitting around the table shooting the shit, not even talking in character, just the players talking to each other. And maybe one of the players says something like, you know, I think Kelvin Blackstaff is super cool. And wouldn't it be cool if we ran into Kelvin Blackstaff sometime? Just for example, player says something like that, and you're like, oh, interesting. So you write down, player Brian wants to meet Kelvin Blackstaff, right? Maybe a month later, you come up, maybe they're in Waterdeep or something, and you come up with a way to use Kelvin Blackstaff and have him come up in the story. The player may not remember that he said in your hearing, hey, I think it'd be cool if we ran into Kelvin Blackstaff. He may not remember saying that, but obviously he knows that he thinks it's cool that they'd meet Kelvin Blackstaff. So it can seem to the player sometimes like you're reading their mind, or that you just somehow did the right thing without knowing, when in reality, you were just taking notes on things that they've said and using it later. Another great way to kind of use this technique is in the assumptions that the players make. Sometimes, or the possibilities they discuss, sometimes they will give you ideas that are better than what you were thinking. So let's say you have an adventure where the player characters are trying to sneak into some kind of like guild headquarters, right? They need to sneak into this guild's headquarters and steal an item or something like that. They're probably going to have this long discussion where they're discussing different plans of how they could do this, theorizing about what some of the defenses might be or where it might be or things like that. And they might have some cool ideas. They might have some cool ideas about how this is guarded or where it might be or what might be involved in getting entry. Don't be afraid to use those ideas. You might be a little afraid to use them. You might feel like, oh, if I use this idea, the players are going to know that I got it from them and it's going to be lame. First of all, the players may not know that you got it from them. And second of all, even if they do know, a lot of times it's not going to be lame. It's going to be cool. Because a lot of times what will happen is, well, what actually happened was you had an idea of what to do. The players were talking amongst themselves, gave you a better idea. So you went with that. So you basically kind of shifted what you were going to do based on what the players were discussing. The players don't know that. And so what they think happened was that you were planning to do the thing that they talked about all along, and they were just so smart that they figured it out. Which, you know, players love feeling smart. They love feeling like they've solved the puzzle, you know? So that's all good. You know, you ended up getting a better idea than what you had and running with it. And it's going to make the players happy because they feel like they really, you know, they really Sherlock Holmes this thing out, you know? Of course, you can't let them know. You can't let them know what you did, or that loses everything. So, you know, as a GM, you got to keep your secrets. Now, like so many techniques, this can be overdone, and this can be very badly overdone to the point where it's not even a game anymore. So don't do this all the time. Don't even do it a lot of the times. Keep this in your back pocket for, again, you're choosing your moments, right? Keep it for the time a player character just has this awesome idea that's just so fantastic, you can't not do it, right? Then do it. Don't do it all the time. Don't, or worse, don't be a lazy GM who's like, I don't even know what the solution to this is. I'll just listen to the players as they're theorizing, and whatever they come up with, that's what I'll run with. Because that's, you might get away with that once. You might. You probably won't get away with it once. What's going to happen is the players are going to realize what you're doing, and they're not going to want to play anymore. I mean, why play in a game where there's no challenge and there's no real answer to the riddle? It's the answer is whatever the players come up with. You know, that's not a game. That's mental masturbation. And most of us, that's not what we signed up for. And it's not very fun. So, you know, definitely be careful. Don't overuse it. But for those, you know, once in a campaign time or whatever, when a player comes up with something really cool and it's better than what you thought of, don't be afraid to run with it. If you only do it once in a great while, it's not going to be a problem. The problem comes when the players know that you're doing it and they feel like they can count on you doing it. Because then it's like, why do we even play this game? Whatever we come up with is going to be right. So why even bother? It's a waste of time. It's a waste of effort. It's a waste of energy, right? But if you do it just once in a blue moon, then they can't count on it. They can't assume that whatever they think up is going to be true. And you keep them guessing. They don't see you coming. And then it can work really well. And finally, kind of the last part of this that I have for today is also pay attention to how the player characters and how the players interact with your NPCs. You know, if there are particular NPCs that they really enjoy, expand those NPCs. And if you can tie those NPCs in some way to their character hooks that they gave you, so much the better. So, you know, kind of the idea here is, you know, you have a player with a given character hook and you're trying to bring that into the story and you need to use a NPC to do that. Use an NPC that the player characters really like or that they enjoy interacting with, as opposed to kind of a more blah NPC or coming up with a new NPC. Try to use an NPC that already has buy-in from the players, and it will just help you kind of amp up the engagement of bringing in this plot thread that comes from a backstory even more. All right, well, that is going to wrap up episode 132 of Game Master's Journey and our discussion on bringing in elements from a player character's backstory into your main story. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have comments or questions on this topic, I would love to hear from you. Shoot me an email, gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. I'd love to hear what you have to say. And I really enjoyed discussing this. And if you have any ideas of strategies that I didn't cover, feel free to let me know and I can share them with a listener, maybe in a future episode, or even better, post it on our community over on Google+, and then everybody can just see it and they don't have to worry about me getting around to talking about it on an episode, because, you know, I am more likely to make an episode on something new than revisit an old topic again. But that said, it has been 132 episodes, so, you know, some revisiting is going to happen. So a lot of times it just depends on how much there is to say about that topic again, based on feedback that I get. But that's the nice thing about the community is, you know, everybody can see your feedback right now and respond to it, and we can have a discussion about it, which is awesome. So I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music, courtesy of Cloudwalker, Transboy, Renfield, Stanko, and Ish. See the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.